This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America live from our Albany studio after we have wrapped up a Saratoga season live from the backstretch every day, but we've moved back down to Albany have now shifted our attention away from Saratoga. And today we'll be looking a little Woodbine, also a little bit of a Saratoga recap coming up later in the program. But Woodbine with, here in the States, the Triple Crown being readjusted a little bit this season. That means Queen's Plate is this afternoon. So I thought we'd talk a little Queen's Plate and maybe one of the undercard stakes as well with our friend Ron Gierkink from the Daily Racing Forum up at Woodbine. Ron, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. How are you today?
Very good. Happy to have you on board to talk a little Woodbine before we talk specifically. Maybe just update us first. What's the weather look like today up in Woodbine?
It's a very nice day, not too hot, sunny, partly cloudy, and we're going to have firm turf for both courses and lane two for both courses. So it's going to be a good day for the horses. No fans, of course, but I think we're looking at a really good 13 race card today.
Very good. And as I say, we'll get to the Queen's Plate in just a second, but I also wanted to take this opportunity to just have you fill us in a little bit. As I say, we wrapped up our Saratoga season, which was very different up there with no fans. We were happy to be broadcasting from the backstretch every day, but as we came in, temperature was taken, and you got a wristband to verify that. I had to have a test at the beginning of the season, and we made it through the season fine. So things worked out here at Saratoga. But as I know, with no fans, it was very different. Talk a little bit about the summer season up there at Woodbine with no fans.
Yeah, it's been pretty quiet at the track. I mean, I wasn't even allowed at the track until about a month ago. And we've only had owners, really, for the last few weeks. And I think maybe when the casino opens later this month, maybe they'll allow some fans back. And today, there'll be owners in the turf club, I believe, that they can eat. And I think that's about it, really. There's not much going on, just a lot of betting, really. And I think, we're looking at next weekend, too, the Woodbine Mile. It's at the same spot as it usually is with the summer and the Talmud Stakes on the Sunday and the Woodbine Mile on the Saturday. And this Queen's Plate was pushed back from June 27th, of course. Really a terrific card, and I think we could be looking at not a record handle today, but certainly maybe second or third best handle in Woodbine Queen's Plate history.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, given what we've seen over the past few months, no fans, it's been surprising in some respects and maybe not so much in others, but yeah, the handle held up at Saratoga and other venues over the past few months, despite the situation, and the racing product, as you say, very good up there at Woodbine with a great card today. So we are certainly hoping that those numbers do hold up and turn out to be very good, not only this week, but next week as well with that Woodbine Mile card. We miss not being up there, though. I wish we were there for this event as we have been the past few years, but we'll certainly be looking forward to your coverage in the racing form of the event today and beyond. But let's start things out and get some of your thoughts on the Queen's Plate. Field of 14 scheduled, a mile and a quarter, $1 million up for grabs. These are horses foaled in Canada. I'm going to tell the guys in the control room, you can just kind of put these back to back. The two contenders, Clayton comes out of the plate trial. Clayton is going to be the number three horse. in the replay, we stretch replay, we look at of the plate trial. And the same day, the Woodbine Oaks was run, and that'll be number one, Curlin's Voyage, winning the race. A Fleet Cat, Catherine, runs second. She'll be also on the undercard. Mervelo in third, who is also in the Queen's Plate. So you can look at that for the next replay. But it looks like the two winners coming out of this are going to attract the attention. Curlin's Voyage, the filly, Clayton, the male. I'm going to take a little pop with the Asmussen horse, Halo, again, who finished second in that plate trial right there. I think that horse is a little bit interesting. What are your thoughts on the Queen's Plate?
Yeah, I mean, the Oaks and the plate trial were sort of two different races, right? I mean, they were very close together, run closely together, but Curlin's Voyage had a really fast pace to chase coming from well back, and she had clear sailing along the inside. And she went one with a 93 buyer. She ran about three-fifths faster than Clayton, who had sort of a stalking trip near a moderate pace. When Clayton hit the top of the stretch, it looked like he was going to just draw away. And he started hanging a bit on his left lead, and he just kind of wore down the leaders. And it was really surprising that it was that hard for him to win in sort of a workmanlike fashion. So I don't know which Clayton is going to show up today, the one who ran like that or the one who was more impressive in winning an allowance race two back. I do really like Curlin's Voyage. I think she'll be the slight favorite over Clayton in spite of the morning line. She's a big, beautiful Curlin filly, a real stayer. And she's been managed pretty carefully this year by Josie Carroll. She skipped the Grade 3 Celine with her before the Oaks to try and have her peaking for the Triple Crown. I think she's done a good job that way. So, I could see her maybe being 2-1 and Clayton 5-2. And you mentioned Mervaya, too. Mervaya rallied inside in the Oaks. She sort of followed Curlin's Voyage around. She got into some traffic towards the entering the stretch. She came running for third, and then she galloped out in front. So I think she's a viable long shot. She might even be less than the 10-1 morning line. And I give her I picked her third behind the two big the two obvious contenders. I mean, past that, we're looking at a host of secondary contenders. And Halo again is interesting. He's the only horse in the race who's run a mile and eighth three times. He came from Kentucky to win the Coronation Futurity last year. He sort of benefited from an inside bias that day. But that's sort of the definitive race for Canadian-bred two-year-olds going a mile and eighth. And no winner of that race has gone on to win the Queen's Plate since Norcliffe in 1976. So it's kind of like the Remsen and the Kentucky Derby. You know, the Remsen winner rarely wins the Kentucky Derby. This is even a longer drought. So I think, I gave him a shot, too. I don't really like him on top, but the horse who was just behind Halo Ginn and Clayton in the play trial dotted line, he went to the lead that day. I think he won't necessarily be on the lead today because I just believe that Siddhartha had three in the race that day and he had to put somebody on the lead. But he's got a shot to maybe be a spoiler. And you have Justin Stein, who's the hottest rider at Woodbine right now. He's sticking with the horse. And I think he's and I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if nobody wants to lead, then Justin could just go. And he won the 2012 Queen's Plate on straight up Dover going wire to wire. So if there's absolutely no pace, which is possible, because I don't really think there's anyone who really wants to lead, then maybe Justin can take the bull by the horns and try to put Dodd Line back on the lead.
You know, you mentioned with the Coronation Futurity and that having a history similar to maybe the Remsen and the Kentucky Derby, but we should also toss in, we talked a little bit about it on the handicapping show that just aired previously, Phillies winning this race, not as unusual as a filly winning our Kentucky Derby. And we were up there just recently for Holy Helena. So Phillies have a nice history in the Queen's Plate.
Yeah, they certainly do. And Wonder Gadot, a couple of years ago, a big, strong filly. She won the plate. I think there's been around 33 in total throughout the history of the race. So it's a real filly race. They've always gotten 5 pounds from the colts traditionally, but because the race is run later in the year this year, that fillies carry 123, compared to the Colts 126.
Oh, right.
So there's a bit of a gap is closed a little bit there, which is interesting because of the different time of year.
Yeah, that's a great point to make. I hadn't even thought about that, but with the different timing, that scale of weights changes up a little bit. And you mentioned Justin Stein.
Yeah.
We talked again a little bit about him on the handicapping show earlier, and that is worth reiterating because normally you would think Hernandez would be kind of running away with things the way he's gone in the past few years. But Justin Stein, it's kind of a good battle between those two right now for leadership up there. Anybody else we should be paying attention to, either as we look at the entire card, either on the jockey side or the trainer side?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about on this particular card, but Daisuke, we have two Japanese riders here. Daisuke Fukumoto has really come on this year. He's turning into one of our elite riders. Kazushi Kimura, his friend, I mean, won the Eclipse Award last year as top apprentice, and he won two Sovereigns. Those two are really sort of up-and-coming riders, but Fukumoto is one to really keep an eye on for the rest of the meet. And he's got a few stakes mounts today. Kimura rides Merveilleux in the plate, so I keep an eye on those two in the future.
Sounds good. All right, let's flip to a race earlier and take a look at the Canadian Grade 2 event on the turf. And again, it's a nice field in here as well. I pulled up Canberra Park just because that's where people will go, and I wanted people, viewers, to see the QE2 last fall. It's Chad Brown, so our viewers are automatically going to tilt towards this one with Chad Brown being the trainer. Hasn't been seen since this race last October in Keeneland. I suppose that's the question mark. Other options, I put Theodora B for Michael Dickinson and Augustin. I thought that one was interesting. Amalfi Coast for Kevin Attard, I think coming off the third last time, maybe primed. Elizabeth Way for Roger Atfield, another one I thought was maybe playable. Art of Almost at 15-1 on the morning line, I could make a case for playing around with that one. What are your thoughts on the Canadian?
Yeah, I like all those horses you mentioned, Seth. Canberra Park, I think, is a big question mark because this is an 11-month layoff.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't she aiming for something else, like Breeders' Cup? This, to me, looks like a spot where you're prepping for something else, especially at a low price. It's worth trying to beat her with some of the others that you mentioned. And don't forget, Canberra Park won those two grade ones she won last year. They were for straight three-year-old fillies. So it's not like they were for three and ups, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, you mentioned Amalfi Coast. She had throat surgery before her last race in the Grade 3 Seaway, and her beginning of her season was pretty disappointing. And she improved a lot last time with Stein aboard, finished in third. That was on the Tapita behind Super Escape, who's really been the top older filly and mare here this year on the Tapita. So I think she's in with a bit of a long-shot chance going back to the turf, which she likes. Elizabeth Way, she's won two graded stakes this year, including one at Gulfstream, and two back she won the Grade 2 Nassau here. She was a little flat last time in the Grade 2 Dance Smartly, but that was won by Theodora B, who was just sort of inherited an easy lead and led all the way under Stein. And but Theodora B is pretty versatile. She doesn't need the lead, and she can sit anywhere in a race, and I think she's sitting on another big one, too, for Michael Dickinson. I actually don't have the scratches yet today, but she was entered Kentucky Downs as well, so when the scratches come in, I don't really know if she's even shipped up, but we'll have to keep tabs on that. And yeah, you mentioned Art of Almost, too. She was fourth in the Dance Smartly. She's pretty consistent on the turf. You can just throw a race out two back on the Tapita. It's not her favorite surface, but those are really the obvious contenders, I think. And like I said, I'm going to try and beat Canberra Park with the others that we mentioned.
Yeah, I agree with you. The layoff, facing older for the first time, maybe looking for something else, I think you can make a case to play around a little bit. With the 20-cent increments we said earlier, you can put together a nice ticket in some of those pick plays. And if you beat a couple of favorites, you can wind up with a nice price. Ron, as always, appreciate the visit and the thoughts on the big day up at Woodbine next week, Woodbine Mile. So maybe we'll check in with you before that as well. But appreciate the conversation this morning.
Sounds good, Seth. Thanks.
And again, appreciate it. And have a big day up there at Woodbine. Ron Gierking from the Daily Racing Forum, which leads us to a break. We will take the break when we come back. We have some more Gary Contessa interviews. We ended the season with three or four still in the can. So when we come back, Gary Contessa sat down up at Saratoga with Safi Joseph. So when we come back, we will have Gary Contessa and Safi Joseph. And again, a little bit later on, have some replays of some of the stakes races that jumped off the page up at Saratoga for a little Saratoga recap as well. All of that when Racing Across America continues. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB, become a better horse player.
Stone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Bob Rock. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Gary Contessa with Capital OTB, and today on this blustery Saratoga morning, Sunday morning, I'm here with trainer Safi Joseph, and you may not know Safi Joseph, but he came from Barbados. His origins are in Barbados, came to Florida, set Florida on fire, for lack of a better term, and now he's made the foray north to Saratoga. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you here. Tell me about your life growing up in Barbados, because people, probably most of our viewers, think of Barbados as a place you go to lay on the beach. And when I went to Barbados, it was phenomenal. From my hotel room, I could see the horses swimming in the bay, and I went down to look at it. So tell me about growing up Barbados.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I grew up in Barbados. We had a farm where we keep all our horses, and the horses would van every morning to the track. So we started like 4:30. We had two four-horse trailers, and we make two trips to get 16 horses through. And we van them to the track. It's like 20 minutes away. They train there, they have a bath, and then they come back home. So from a young kid, from 3-4 years old, I was always outside. Like, I mean, that's where I wasn't supposed to be around the horses. Like, but I'd be going in their stalls, and the grooms would be teaching me. And my dad would say, you got to be careful, you know, because you're young and they're protected of you. But so I grew up learning that kind of aspect. Just like horses are the only thing I ever knew my whole life. And in Barbados, we do it a bit differently. We kind of, the horses go to the beach a lot. They swim in the ocean, and it's an amazing thing to see if you've never seen it. As far as they'll be, they'll swim like 3-4 minutes okay. At a time.
Yeah, no, sorry. Yeah. Can you please?
So they'll swim 3-4 minutes. That's normally how we do it. Some people swim a bit more, but we always err on the side of caution as how far we swim them, and they enjoy it. I mean, they come out of the water, their legs are so much tighter. I think it's just from letting them soak in the tides has something to do it, in my opinion. And it refreshes them. A lot of older horses, my dad was really good at training older horses, like finding them to get back their form. Like, we would buy them from England or buy them from America. Horses that had potential and kind of lost their way. And I think that just rejuvenated them, that kind of training aspect.
So your dad, Safi Joseph Sr., was he like a leading trainer in Barbados? Tell me about his life.
He never had, I would say, that like a lot of horses. He always had like between 20 or 30. That's what we had. We had 30 stables on our farm. So he, some of the leading trainers over there probably had like 60, 70. But he was always one of the top trainers. He won the best races. Yeah, he won a lot of good quality races.
And when did you become a trainer in Barbados? Tell us about that.
Well, I started training at 18, 19. Over there, it's more of a hobby. I mean, we run twice a week. When my dad was training, he used to run four times a month, and then when I started training, they ran twice a month. because they lost kind of the money to subsidize it from the lotteries. And basically, I started training from 18 or 19. And started off with like three or four horses and just worked our way up. And from right off the bat, thankfully, a horse that my dad trained, a filly named Unchallenged, she produced a really good horse named Walk'em by a local bred. And that horse kind of got me through the foot in. It was on like, what do you call it, Triple Crown Trail. She ran second and third in most of them. The fillies over there run against the boys. It's not like you don't have filly races. You have very few filly races, but in that kind of aspect. And then like the following year, my dad selected a good yearling. And I mean, he didn't have much pedigree. And he just turned out to be a freak of a horse. And he was a top 2 year old over there. And as a 3 year old, he went unbeaten. He went 7-for-7. His name is Are You Talking to Me? And he won the Triple Crown. And so at 22, I had a horse that trained me. I didn't train him, basically. I mean, at 22, you thought you knew, but then I'm 33 now, and I realize I didn't really know anything. But here we are with this horse, and he just took us on a crazy ride, and he was a phenomenal horse. And like I always err on the side of caution of how we trained him. He was trained very, very light because he was a tough horse in the morning. Like, and he would kind of like want to get away from you. So we always trained him very light, and I remember when he won like 7/8, they said he wouldn't go a mile and an eighth, and then he won a mile and an eighth, and they said he wouldn't go a mile and a quarter, and all he did was win. And I mean, I think he trained me the horse.
Now tell me about the transition. You decide, I'm going to the United States. How does that come about? Because that's a bold move.
Well, I'm always thinking in your mind, again, you're young, you're crazy, and I'm thinking I want to be the best. And you're in your mind, you're thinking you're the best, but you're not really the best when realistically. But you're thinking you're the best, and Barbados, you can't be the best. I mean, you can't get to another level. Again, they only race twice a month. So I had this horse, Are You Talking to Me? And I thought he was one of the best local horses to ever be there. And we had a horse named Incitatus, not us, it was owned by other people. And he went to Canada, and he won graded stakes up there. So on that judgment, we were kind of on that form line. We thought he could be a graded stakes horse up here. I think that's better my decision. I got on a flight. I came to Gulfstream. I got a license. I didn't have any horses. And then went back to, that was in like January. Then went back to Barbados and we shipped two horses up that we had bought at OBS the previous year. Went to Ocala and I started with two horses and bought like four more at a sale. And that, so we had six horses, all owned by me and my dad. After that, there was a Ricky Griffith. He was from Barbados, but he was training in Canada then. He had an owner and he asked the owner to give us a horse. So we came down with seven horses to Calder, and they wouldn't give us stalls. It was hard to get stalls, so we rented stalls at the training center next door, and we were there for like 3 months, 4 months. Every day I would go to, every week I would go ask the guy for stalls, and he said, come back the next week, come back. And it was hard to get in. And then finally, after 3 or 4 months, we got in. And then we got when we first came over here, we didn't know if we could train dirt horses, because we race only on the turf. So that was a question mark, because would we be able to train a dirt horse? I mean, you never trained a dirt horse before. And when we came over, we entered a horse, his name was Artifacto, my first winner. We entered him on the grass first time out. It rained, he won by 9. And then the second time out, it rained, off the turf again, he won by 9 on the dirt. So eventually, like early in the first year, I think I didn't win a turf race. And then every time I run on the turf, the horses won't run good. And my brother would be calling from Barbados, he's like, stay away from the turf. Just stick to the dirt.
Well, you became a natural training dirt horses. It happened.
Yeah, so just it's funny. Like, and then at that point, we just didn't have turf horses. We were trying horses in the turf because that's what we knew. But it's reality how it works. Like, all I knew was turf, and then I came over here, and all I was winning was on the dirt at first. But now it's gone on where we've kind of balanced out in that kind of aspect.
And now your stable seems extremely powerful. You have a lot of good horses at different levels, and it made you come to set. What made you come to Saratoga? Just that process of trying to upgrade, and give it a shot?
Yeah, the reason for coming to Saratoga, like, I always heard all these great things about Saratoga. And everyone said, you gotta go. And I've been in America since 2011. I made a pact to myself. I was like, I'm never gonna go to Saratoga until I have horses to take me there. I don't wanna go visit without horses. And thankfully, last year I thought about it and I said, you know what? Let's just stay put for a little while. Let's try to really stay at the top in Florida before we go. And thankfully, it built up really good over the year. Picked up a group of owners they're the reason for all our success, basically. I mean, without owners as a trainer, you can't do it. No. You have to have the right owners, and we have the right owners behind me. And I have owners that want me to succeed. I mean, they go out of their way to, hey, do you need this kind of horse? Do you want that kind of horse? And they're the reason I wear a Saratoga. I mean.
And 6 days from now, you're going to be on the biggest stage in the whole world, running New York traffic in the Kentucky Derby. Just tell us about that. Tell us about your feelings about the horse and how you acquired the horse, and give us a little insight about New York traffic.
I mean, we acquired him. I trained for the guy, John Finelli, before. I had math wizard for him that I claimed, and when I won Pennsylvania Derby last year, ironically, New York traffic made his first start that day for a different trainer, John's trainer at Parks. And I think he ran third behind Independence Hall, who was highly thought of at that time. And I told John, next time that horse runs, he's gonna win. Let me know. And then I remember John called me like a couple of weeks after, and he's like, you watched the race? And I was like, no, you didn't tell me. And he told me what the horse won. So he won his second start. And after that, he kind of lost his way. They ran him in a couple of stakes in New York. They ran him in stakes at Parks. And he kind of lost his form. And I had a really good two-year-old on there, actually. Probably the best horse I've ever trained in America so far, named Chancet. And he was really rolling at that time. And John called, he's like, what do you think I should do? I was like, John, he's a New York bred. I know he's lost his way. Send him down here. Let's hook him up with some of these horses. See how he stacks up. If he's good enough, I'm going to tell you he's good enough. If he's not, we could always ship him back to New York, run him in a allowance race there. And he's like, that sounds good. He sent him down, and he started training well. And we had him for like 6-7 weeks before we ran him. And we ran him first time out for us, and he won going two turns.
It seems like he found himself under your tutelage. And now we're headed to the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he won that race, and then he just gradually got better and better as he went on. And we spaced all his races. I mean, after Louisiana, at that point, we didn't know the Derby was going to cancel, so we had enough points. And then we backed off him, and we gave him his little break then. And his races have been spaced where he's got better and better gradually. He hasn't made big jumps, but it's like been like 4 or 5 points. I use the bars a lot, and he's been like 4 or 5 points each time.
New York traffic trying so hard, and he is closing the gap now. Here comes New York traffic after Authentic. Authentic, New York traffic are going to hit it together. Here it is. Photo finish, Authentic and New York traffic.
We feel like he's capable of making another jump. He's going to need to make another jump to compete against his law and these kind of horses, but we feel like he's heading in the right direction to do that.
It's been a great visit with trainer Safi Joseph, showing us that Barbados isn't just about beaches. It also produces great trainers. And we really appreciate your time today on the show and giving us this insight into your world.
Thank you very much, Gary. Appreciate it.
Thank you, and the best to you next Saturday.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play. In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
The New York hero, Tiz the Law and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
When New York-bred Tiz the Law won the 2020 Belmont Stakes, OTB-TV was live with owner Jack Knowlton to capture all the excitement.
And certainly, seeing what he did today, we think a mile and a quarter is well within his range, and hopefully he can prove it at Saratoga Racecourse.
For exclusive interviews and racing information, stay with Capital OTB and OTB-TV and win more.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Yeah, again, thanks to Gary Contessa for his work on those interviews. Mick Richards put them together. And I think we still have maybe two or three of those left to fire up as we go along. Safi Joseph, he was talking a little bit about New York traffic. I have the chart right here. New York traffic winds up mid-pack, eighth in the field of 15 at the Derby after having attended the pace. Authentic kept going, and New York traffic faded a little bit. In that Derby. Tis the Law, of course, running second. We'll air out of the balloon with that one. Air out of the balloon for some of us. Brian in the control room just reminded me, I was actually I was at a barbecue this week with Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette, and he's written an article about it, but he was at the barbecue this week. He was talking about a group of friends, a local group of six or seven folks put together a pick five ticket for the Derby. And unfortunately, they punched the wrong. They wanted to play a little Tis the Law, and then the last leg, whoever punched the ticket punched Authentic by mistake. So their mistake cost them, cost them nothing. They collected $76,000 on the mistake. How come I can't make mistakes like that? And again, you can check out Mike McAdam's article, the Gazette, or the Gazette website, where he fills in the particulars on the happy mistake for some locals in the Kentucky Derby last weekend. Again, I said at the top of the show, we'll do a little Saratoga recap. And the numbers, they came down to the last day, which was a lot of fun. We could see it coming. We were keeping our fingers crossed it would come down to the last day, because Saratoga is a special meet. The jockeys want to win. The trainers want to win. The owners want to win. You like to put any meet in your back pocket, whether it's Aqueduct Winter or Saratoga, but Saratoga is special. And so the brothers did duke it out through the entire meet. It came down to the last day in the last few races, with Irod Ortiz winning by one over his brother Jose, 59-58 as far as the winners. Joel Rosario was third with 48. Luis Saez had 45. He missed a few days at the early part of the meet. A lot of folks think if Saez, the way he was riding at the end of the meet, if he'd been riding the entire meet, might have been right up there battling for the lead as well. Jose Lizcano, then Castellano, Gaffleone, Junior Alvarado, Manny Franco, Dylan Davis, John Velasquez, and Ricardo Santana round out the top, what is that, 10, about top 12. Trainer side, also down to the last day. Now, Todd Pletcher comes into the last day. I think he had four, maybe a five-win lead as they came into the last day. But Chad Brown gets off to a start and wins. And then I think he won a couple. And then there was a non-DQ that would have moved Chad up and didn't. Todd subsequently gets a winner, and he winds up four ahead to round out the meet. So Todd Pletcher at 32 wins, Chad Brown at 28, Christophe Clément, who was so hot early, ties with Mike Maker for 20. They both had great meets. Bill Mott, boy, he was on fire the last couple of days. He winds up tied 15 with Linda Rice. Linda had a great meet. Steve Asmussen with his two-year-olds was phenomenal. 14 wins. Rudy Rodriguez, 13. Jim Bond, 12 wins, but with a far more limited number of starters than some of these others, was winning at a high percentage. He had a great meet. Wesley Ward, Jorge Abreu, Orlando Noda wound up with 9. We had him on the show early. He said his goal was 6, so he certainly surpassed that. Jeremiah Engelhart also with 9. We had him on, had a couple of stakes wins late in the meet. Dave Donk with that 3-win Sunday. He had a good meet. Brad Cox, Shug, Robert Tross, and Ray Handel round out the top 6, 9, 12, 15, top 18 as far as that. But again, Todd Pletcher does wind up with the title, 32-28, Chad Brown. Had talked to Todd, or had read comments from Todd early in the meet, where he was going well, but still felt like, you know, I'm not quite sure I have the firepower to get it done. Certainly Chad had a lot of bullets in his holster, and so Todd was a little bit leery early that he was going to get it done. And after it was all said and done, towards the end of the card on Monday, they gave the award, Jockey and Trainer Award, and Todd met the press just outside the winner's circle to comment on it a little bit. We have just about a minute or so from Todd with a couple of jump cuts in there, but he talks a little bit about a buddy of his, said, hey, I got you at 9-1 as winning the meet, and Todd said, I don't know if you got good enough odds, but he talks about being happy he won, congratulating his staff for the hard work. And so here is about a minute or so of Todd Pletcher Monday, after he was I'm being told to hold on, so I will hold on for that video, and I will touch on also the numbers. I have it here. As far as Naira on the numbers side of things, a pretty good meet. And it was kind of held up right from the beginning and kept the trend going that goes back to really earlier this spring when racing had the five tracks going and going against no sports. Fodder knocked it out of the park with their handle. And really the handle numbers at the various racetracks have been holding up given the situation and no fans being allowed on the track. And at Saratoga, that is even more pertinent because of the numbers they will normally get on a day-to-day basis. But the handle this summer for Saratoga, $702 million. Last summer with fans, $705 million. So really the handle was right with last year, fans versus no fans. So good numbers there. Don't forget, though, and I've said this before, Saratoga also means admission, parking, programs, concessions. They make a good dose of money with fans on track at Saratoga that wasn't there this year. But it certainly, again, handle-wise, held up very, very well. Also, again, Irad Ortiz, the leading jockey, Todd Pletcher, the leading trainer, and on the owner's side of things, and that pulled up earlier. It was Klarovich. They had 13 wins during the meet. Mike Rapoli, 3 wins back. So that was a nice little battle, too. As I said, it's the meet everybody wants to win, and the owners are right in that mix as well. And Klarovich gets it done with the 13 wins at this meet. So Saratoga, there are your meet leaders. Pretty good handle numbers for Saratoga. And we tend to be a little Saratoga-centric, or I do anyway, particularly with us sitting on the backstretch. But being out there and fandom, as it were, and for me as well, at the end of the day, I go home, turn on the TV and watch some Del Mar races. But maybe we don't talk about it quite as much during the season because we are kind of Saratoga-centric. But at Del Mar, it was Flavian Pratt over Umberto Rispoli in the jockey's title. Jockey and trainer at Del Mar came down to the last day or two as well. But Flavian Pratt just gets it done over Umberto Rispoli, the real up-and-comer out there in a tight battle. And on the trainer's side of things, it was Peter Miller. And I'm just looking. He got it done over... now I don't see it. Oh, Phil D'Amato. And they had tied going into the last day, but it does wind up being Peter Miller getting it done on the trainer side of things. So Flavian Pratt and Peter Miller get it done out at Del Mar. Their numbers overall were also very well. So they handle-wise out at Del Mar, they had a pretty good season also. They had that little blip, as opposed to Saratoga, which COVID-wise, the season held up very nicely and everybody stayed safe. Beginning of that Del Mar meet, they had that, 3 days where they had to take a little bit of a break. A couple of jockeys came up positive, so they went to the sideline briefly. But subsequent to that, the meet went fine. And as I say, their numbers held up nicely as well. I didn't mention the race numbers at Saratoga, which we wound up with total of 409 races, 226 on dirt, 183 on turf. 32 were taken off the turf due to weather, and most of those were in the last probably week and a half. Up until you got to that point, it was pretty good weather-wise. That 409 this year compares to 403 last year. So we actually ran more races this year than we ran last year. I think there was a canceled portion of a card last year, though, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe even a canceled card. What day? Yes, the Haskell day. I'm being reminded there was that heat day last year that we did lose up here. So that would kind of lead into the more races this year versus last year. As far as handicapping, I was pretty happy with mine. I handicap every day on the Equidaily website. My picks were available at CapitalOTB.com when I was on the handicapper support in the morning. But I do the entire season over on Equidaily. I had 121 winners on top, so I was very happy. I passed that 120 mark for 40 days. You're averaging over 3 winners a day. I the leader, and I have to double check on numbers and whatnot, but we talked about it when we had Tom Law, and it was John Chapazian. He had over 130. I'm not sure the exact number. Tom Law edged me out for what I think was second in the public handicappers. I haven't put together the whole list yet, but I've checked most of the newspapers. Pretty sure Tom Law was second. He wound up with a couple more winners than I did. He had 123 out of 121. And then the various other public handicappers around. As far as OTB versus the Times Union, they put it in the books, the head-to-head matchup, probably a week and a half before the end of the meet. They opened up early, and we just could not catch up. But the last week of the meet, I think we won 5 of the 6 and tied the other one. So we ended on a tear. We just couldn't get that tear going early enough to make the head-to-head work out well. But we also had the charity bets in the Times Union every day, and all the charities wound up with some money. So if you were watching that, you could have played along and maybe cashed a few tickets as well. So kind of happy with the way the meet played out for me personally, but I think if you were watching OTB, the plays of the day and some of the other handicappers were giving out great information as well. I said it earlier, if you want to write viewer mail at capitalotb.com. I invited people to do it on Monday. You know, just always say that at the end of the season. Look back, and if you watch the season, things you like, things you'd like to see changed, something you'd like to see next season maybe added, we'd love to hear from you. Viewer mail at capitalotb.com, and we've gotten a handful of nice emails kind of complimenting the programming. One person said, really enjoy seeing Mormino and Nado on the handicappers report in the morning, and I agree. They both have far more of a historical perspective at their fingertips. I have the big races I remember, but there are some of the sub big races. Those guys can kind of pull them up. That me, I have to look up some of those races. But it's fun to listen to them in the morning. And again, we appreciate. And there you go. Marketing mail at capitalotb.com. Or viewer mail at capitalotb.com. Again, we'd love to hear from you as far as that Saratoga programming and anything you'd like to see added or what you like this year. I'd love to hear from you, so let us know. All right, I've been told that we do have the Todd Pletcher video ready. Again, this was after he had clinched the title. He commented a little bit about his team and how he thought even as the meet got going, he was unsure that he was going to be able to sustain and win it. So again, just about a minute or so, going back to Monday after Todd had clinched the title, Todd Pletcher.
Get the title back.
Feels great, very rewarding for the whole team. You know, a lot of people put a lot of hard work into it. Very satisfying.
Yeah, I think it's always more special here. And I always say, I think Angel Cordero is the one that made it mean something. You know, he always fought really hard. So he's been texting me the last couple of days. I think he won 14, so it's kind of cool for me to tie it.
So are you surprised you won it?
I am, yeah. I think a friend of mine told me a couple weeks into the meet, he said, you know, I bet on you to win the title. I got 9-1. I said, I don't think that was a good enough price. But, yeah, so coming in, we didn't feel like we had, you know, the ammo to do it. But like I said, a couple weeks in, it seemed like things were gelling, so... A lot of people put in a lot of hard work. Big team effort.
Not bad. 14 titles, as he said. A friend of his said, yeah, I bet you to win the title. I got 9-1. And Todd said, I'm not sure you got the right odds. But it was a good battle right down to the last couple of days. And Todd Pletcher, 14 titles. Tying on the trainer side what Angel Cordero did on the jockey side with 14 titles. 14 titles of Saratoga is pretty darn good. So congratulations to Todd Pletcher. Let's, before we wrap up the show, take a look at, pulled up some stretch runs from some of the more impressive races this season, the ones that kind of stood out to me. And the one that jumps out right off the bat is the Travers and the performance by Tis the Law. Tis the Law, the number 6 horse, Caracaro 7, Max Player, the number 4. But Tis the Law, chart margin of 5.5 lengths. And man, he just wraps up here. A 109 buyer. Subsequently runs second in the Kentucky Derby, probably coming up with about a 103. Authentic had a 105, and given where Tis the Law was, probably about a 103. So his number went backwards a little bit, but was still the second best buyer ever. I just think, you know, people are kind of Monday morning quarterbacking, as we are all want to do in those situations, and I'm not arguing that that's part of the fun of sports. But I think he ran well. He just ran into a horse that ran a little bit better that day. You take Authentic out of the race, and you were going to Baltimore shooting for a Triple Crown and talking about how well he did. But certainly, as far as the Saratoga meet, that race stands out as one of the tops, if not the top. Tis the Law, we all waited for it after the Belmont Stakes, and we got to that August 8th race, and everybody was ready, and he performed, turned for home, and just kind of stretched it out, and a 109 buyer, as I say, man, he just kind of gearing them down there, and as they come around on the gallop out, he's pulling them up and trying to get them started. He could have gone around again. Talked about this earlier with Mike Callahan on the handicapper support. Win-win-win in the forego. Win-win-win is going to be the number 7. Look for the Chicklet, the Chicklet is way back there, and he disappears from the screen on the left-hand side. Look at that Chicklet, and now look at him come. Win-win-win with the sustained run on the outside. Look at the 7 Chicklet just zipping by. This is incredible. From where he was to get up and get it done. Chart margin, half a length over Complexity. True Timber runs 3rd. You can see the rain there on that crazy day where the rain kind of went back and forth from heavy rain to sunshine. Probably 3 times during the afternoon, a little bit later in the turf race. By the time you saw the replay of that, the sun was shining. It was a beautiful day, but not during the forego. As the rain was coming down, track listed as sloppy and sealed, and win-win-win, completely relishing it, and maybe also relishing, to be honest, the 7 furlongs. And Mike Trombetta kind of said, Mike Trombetta afterwards, I probably should have pulled that video up too. We had a little bit of a Trombetta after the race, and he said, you know, I saw my Chicklet back there, and the Chicklet disappeared, and I didn't think I was going to win the race. But then the conversation also went to the 7 furlongs. Now, you have a good 3-year-old, and you kind of feel like, let's try the longer distances, and let's see what we have. But this is a horse that last year set a track record at 7 furlongs, and what he did just a couple of weeks ago up here at Saratoga in the forego at 7 furlongs. Maybe he has found his comfort zone at that trip. But again, another one of the more professional and eye-popping performances at the meet. 97 buyer in that forego win for win-win-win. Gamine in the test, another standout performance. She came off of a spectacular eye-popping performance in the Acorn where she got a 110. Gamine's going to be the number 5 horse here. Chart margin of 7 lengths as the 30-cent to a dollar favorite, and she comes out of this with a 108 buyer. Again, following up the 110 in the Acorn, could she put a couple together like that? The answer, yes. 2nd in this race, a super talented Venetian Harbor, and she just makes it a laugher as opposed to that one. Gamine getting it done and coming out of the test, heading to the Kentucky Oaks with, as I say, a 108 buyer in that performance. Who would she face in the Kentucky Oaks, and why were people so excited to see that matchup on the day before the Derby? She was going to face Swiss Skydiver, who was coming out of the Alabama. Swiss Skydiver is going to be the number 5 horse in here. The 102 she fires in here, the 102 buyer, was the first triple-digit buyer of her career. But she was just always getting it done. But this is a standout performance. The chart margin here, 3.5 lengths. But, you know, there's never any real challenge. Bonnie South runs 2nd. Harvey's Little Goyle runs 3rd. But Swiss Skydiver, very impressive. And, again, being geared down here in the Alabama with a 102 buyer. Subsequently, runs 2nd to She Dares the Devil in the Kentucky Oaks. I thought she was going by in the stretch. Gamine, maybe there are distance limitations. Maybe the 110 and the 108 buyer got to Gamine. I'll be interested to see what Bob Baffert chooses to do with this one as far as distance and whatnot, whether he decides, oh, there are limitations, or, maybe picks spots for longer races, shows up at a one turn at Belmont or something, or what she has left of her career, I suppose, is a question mark as well. But we were looking forward to that Kentucky Oaks. Gamine fades. Swiss Skydiver, I thought, ran a really good 2nd. She Dares the Devil ran a 101 in the Kentucky Oaks buyer. which you would think, given the position, puts Swiss Skydiver in the Oaks at maybe a 100 or a 99 after the 102 we saw there in the Alabama. But again, with that test performance and the Alabama performance, just set up the showdown in the Kentucky Oaks that everybody was looking forward to. And then Brad Cox ruins it all with She Dares the Devil getting it done there at 15-1. But Swiss Skydiver ran very well in that Kentucky Oaks. And finally, just wanted to show one from just the other day, because the meet wrapped up with a very, very impressive stakes performance from a two-year-old, Jackie's Warrior, in the hopeful, getting it done again on closing day up at Saratoga. Jackie's hopeful here, the number six horse, 2 1/4 lengths the final chart margin, still undefeated, a couple of stakes under the belt for Jackie's Warrior. This was a 95 buyer victory, and Jackie's Warrior prior to this one had broken the maiden down at Churchill with an 81 buyer, had won the Saratoga special with an 88, so moves up to a 95 and goes 3 for 3 in the career for trainer Steve Asmussen. He's got a nice two-year-old on his hands. You know, we'll see. What are the limitations for this one? Maybe just precocious and the rest of the class catches up. You always have to wonder about the talented two-year-olds in the summer, but that was a nice performance on a closing day at Saratoga just last Monday. Wanted to show that one from Jackie's Warrior and Steve Asmussen. Again, a 95 buyer. And this time of year, a 95 for a two-year-old, very nice number for Jackie's Warrior on Labor Day to wind things up at Saratoga. And again, it's always hard to believe. It seems you get a couple days out from Saratoga, and it seems like, man, it was so long ago, and it already seems like, boy, it's in our rearview mirror. And but it was just a few days ago that we wrapped up a fun, interesting, different Saratoga meet, and I hope everybody agrees that it was fun, because I think the racing was top notch, as demonstrated by some of those replays we just looked at. The weather held up, so if you were in your backyard watching, or if you went to one of the watch parties, for the most part you were able to do that in some very nice weather, again except for maybe the last week and a half or so where there were 2 or 3 days where the weather got a little dicey, but otherwise it was very nice. I was planted outside most days, either in our tent on the backstretch doing a little work, or the auxiliary press box, which was the turf terrace dining room, which I got to like. That was a nice spot. And that was, I mean, the press box was open during the meet, and there was pretty much every day probably 4 or 5 regulars in there. And then over in the turf terrace, another 4 or 5 people. And it was just done that way to space people out. You had your option, and I liked the turf terrace. And pretty much every day, Tim Wilkin from the Times Union was in there, and Mike McAdam from the Gazette. Teresa Gennaro was there some days. Bob Ehalt was out in the turf terrace a few days as well. So again, there were a group of people out there and some in the press box, and as I say, just done for kind of social distancing situations. When you got up, you put your mask on, and as I say, the meet held up very well from that perspective. But on the racing side of things, again, it was a fun meet, and hopefully it was fun for you as well, and more importantly, I hope everybody made a little money. Certainly those guys, those Schenectady guys that had the mistaken Kentucky Derby ticket made a little bit of dough. So congratulations to them on their mistake. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Again, I'll be out in the front portion of the race book a little bit later on with a live bankroll. We'll focus a little bit on Woodbine on Queen's Plate Day, but maybe some Kentucky Downs, maybe a little Monmouth as well, and more. We'd love to see you down here joining us for the live bankroll. Going to wind the show up, though. We have a little bit of a Saratoga recap. Just, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 minutes looking at some of the highlights of the morning programming, some of the racing action as well. So, again, one more reminder of the recently concluded Saratoga meet as we wrap up Racing Across America for this Saturday afternoon. I'll be back in tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock for a Sunday edition of Racing Across America. So we'll see you then. But as we wrap it up, one more look back at Saratoga. Stay tuned.
And they're off at Saratoga.
Saratoga Race.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined by trainer Mark Hennig via Zoom. Randy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Seth. Nice to be with you, whether it's Zoom or sitting next to you.
Happy to be joined now. I mentioned at the top of the show a friend, Rich Migliori. It wouldn't be a Saratoga season without Rich coming to sit in with us. Rich, good morning.
Good morning.
Perfect timing for Jeremiah Engelhart. So I invited him on this morning. Maya, good morning.
Good morning.
Frank Marabotti, you also a regular guy who loves the races.
You've been doing it for years with us. So,
you know, the other thing I wanted to say, too, is, you know, your following of the show is so deep that every Christmas time I get text before text on Christmas Eve and Christmas that you're on TV right now. I'm looking at you on TV. So Merry Christmas.
Yes. Tom Dancing comes back strong today to win the Honorable Miss in 1:08:350.
Be joined by another guy that sets up shop in Kentucky. Jack Sisterson joined.
She's not tonight. She's only getting better.
Vexatious, and the champ is challenged here. Midnight Bizou, Vexatious. The two of them come down to the finish in the grade one personal ensign, and it's going to be Vexatious to win it by a head. It's Improbable and Erod Ortiz Jr. to win the Whitney.
Brown here on a big grade one Saturday at Saratoga. We've got the four-star Dave as well as the Diana on Sunday.
Mean Mary, rushing fall. Now nothing between them as they pass the eighth pole. On the outside, rushing full. Mean Mary on the inside. A terrific finish here in the Diana. Rushing full. Now has the lead in deep stretch. And rushing full has won it. Trainer Chad Brown has taken the Diana in 5 consecutive years. It is Channel Maker and Manny Franco with a grade one win in the Sword Dancer. Channel Maker the winner.
And on the extreme outside, here comes a tremendous move from Win, Win, Win to win it at the end. Win, Win, Win storms down the stretch to take the grade one Forgo.
They're showing, you know, she's Gamine is, we know that she's just a tremendous racehorse. And
to the stretch, Johnny Velasquez now asking a bit more from Gamine, and she is responding with an eighth of a mile to the finish. Gamine has opened up on Venetian Harbor. She's in front by 4, now by 5. She won the Longines Acorn at Belmont, and she wins the Longines test here at Saratoga. And look at the final time. 7 furlongs, 1:20:04. Gamine is a brilliant 3-year-old filly.
Kenny McPeak, who is front and center in today's Alabama. Kenny, thank you so much for joining us. Swiss Skydiver.
And Swiss Skydiver is sailing home here in the 140th running of the Alabama.
He has been brilliant.
Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a 4-length lead. He's left the others behind. It's Tis the Law. He won the Belmont Stakes. He's going to win the Run Happy Travers. And now it's on to Kentucky as the favorite in the Derby. Here he is, Saratoga's hometown hero, Tis the Law.
It's Sunday morning. That means it's loose on the lead. Good morning, Seth Merrill and Steve Bick. Steve, good morning.
So disgusted with you. I don't know what to say.
He walks up on the set and immediately points. I said, summer casual. I'm wearing the seersucker. It's a beautiful morning. This is what, you don't always have to wear the tie. It's summertime.
You believe this? Is this what you're paying for?
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.